Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
One of the big stories this week, legalized sports gambling. It's going to become more and more widespread. More and more widespread in time, and I would say sooner than later in some places. Just not yet. You can't get down just yet. But if you could, I would have some intel to share with you. If you could get down, my lock of the week would have been that LeBron James was going to have a LeBron James game last night. Down 0-1 in that series after a blowout in game one. Everybody knew that was coming. I knew it. You knew it. Brad Stevens knew it. The Celtics knew it. And it still happened. We all knew it, and it still happened. He had 21 in the first quarter. He tied a playoff career high for points in a quarter. He had 42 on the night. 12 assists, 10 boards, his fifth 40-point game of the playoffs. Everybody knew it was coming, and there was still nothing surprising about it. He was doing everything. He was dominating everybody. Nobody delivers like that. Nobody delivers in a situation where you know he's going to do it, and the guy still does it. The only thing that could slow LeBron down was a shot to the head, and it looked like he might have been concussed. But he still came back and he balled out because you knew he would. You could count on that. But as much as you could count on that, there was one more thing that you could always count on. Cleveland's defense. Because as good as LeBron was, and he was tremendous, Cleveland's defense was complete and utter garbage in the second half.
Garbage.
And then again, why wouldn't it be? It's been all season long. So while there was a LeBron James game, it was also a J.R. Smith game. And when you have a J.R. Smith game, there are only two possible outcomes. Either it's going to be so right, or it's going to be so wrong. And last night, it was so wrong. Check this line out. 0 points. 0 for 7 from the field. A shooting percentage of 0.0. 3 rebounds, 1 assist, and 1 incredibly dirty and dumb play.
Celtics can go up by 10. Smart lob. Horford catches and got fouled. Pushed in the back by J.R. Smith.
Oh.
And now we got more trouble. Yeah. Terry Rozier wants a piece of J.R. Smith after the cheap shot.
It actually was
Smart was in
Smart
it.
And
Rozier tried to step in between them, and they're going to have to look at all this.
Well, what they need to look at is a pushed in from J.R. Smith.
Right.
He's frustrated.
Al Horford is standing up, kind of walking around. Jay Larinaga comes to get Marcus Smart, and Phil Lynch, Celtics director of security, kind of yanking Marcus Smart out of any trouble here.
Well, you're not allowed to do that. You can't do that. See, my man Al Horford almost got pushed right into the glass if he'd gone any higher. Now, you can't do that. Celtics radio, thank you. Now, you can't do that. You can't do that ever. And you certainly can't do that down 8 with less than 4 minutes to go in game 2. A game that would have been nice to steal. Hell, a game you needed to stay in that series. Instead, JR shoves Al Horford in the back. He gets the building even more amped than before, and it helped the Celtics extend their lead. Hey, look, I'm not looking for JR to be the guy to split the atom, but that wasn't smart. That really was not smart. Then again, it is the same dude who once threw soup at an assistant coach. So, if you're like me, you probably couldn't wait to hear how JR would explain that after the game, because the Celtics were pissed. So how was JR going to justify that? How would he spin it so he was in the right?
It was a good call. I blatantly pushed him. Wait, what?
Did he say, quote, it was a good call? I blatantly pushed him?
It was a good call. I blatantly pushed him.
All right, then. Respect. Respect for owning it, I guess. But he still did it. But let's be real. This is not all about J.R. Smith. This is about the entire Cavaliers team. Because like Houston the night before, while the offense was not great, the defense was even worse. You see, the only thing that can stop a LeBron James game is a Cavaliers defensive game. And as good as LeBron James is, even he can't erase a Cleveland defense game. Not when they're not getting back on defense, not when they keep finding themselves on the wrong end of defensive mismatches, and not when they're getting flat out hustled. Marcus Smart was outworking everybody not named LeBron James, like he did in this sequence.
Jaylen bobbles it, spins, throws it out towards Horford, has to get rid of it late in the shot clock. His three is no good. Smart taps the rebound out to Tatum, attacks the paint, reverses it up, no good. Smart flies in for an offensive rebound, puts it off the window and in. And a night that began as a masterpiece being painted by LeBron has been graffitied up by Marcus Smart.
Right? I mean, it's kind of cliche to say that Marcus Smart makes winning plays, but the fact of the matter is, this guy makes winning plays. That was like four winning plays in a single sequence. His cat's filthy. Again, I don't want to say that it's a bad sign for Cleveland that LeBron had another epic LeBron game and they still got hammered, but LeBron had an epic LeBron game and they still got hammered. And he'll probably have one more of those, maybe two. Hell, he could have five more in this series. But unless Ty Lue figures out how to get guys who play no defense to play some defense at a high level, it's just not going to matter. Because the Celtics are that good and Cleveland's defense is that bad. And unless the Cavs can swing a deal for four decent defenders, then this series is already over. And then LeBron is already out the door and taking his talent someplace else. I said before the series, playing the way he is right now, you do not want to bet against LeBron. But right now, I would if I could. And with legalized gambling coming to you soon, you could too. Let's talk about that matchup. 1-800-636-8686. That guy could not do any more than he did last night, and it still wasn't enough. Not nearly enough. Rashad Jennings is my guest. Rashad, it's great to have you here in studio, man. How are you? What's up?
Appreciate it. Appreciate it being on the show.
It's good to have you on the show. Now, you are an author. Growing up, you were a guy that used to go to bookstores. So I've got to ask first, how does it feel to have your own book in bookstores right now?
I can't believe it. I really can't. Like, coming from this 0.6 GPA, overweight, chubby kid, glasses, asthma, you know, fifth-string running back with an incurable dream, to say now that I'm an author, I can't believe it. I really can't.
Let's go back to that for a minute. I mean, you were the 250th pick in the draft. You played 8 years in the NFL. This is amazing in and of itself. But you go back further, and you touched on this. You had a 0.6 GPA. You described yourself, quote, as a little overweight, dorky kid with glasses and asthma. I'm looking at you right now. You turned out all right. What were you like as a child?
Definitely was everything I just said. Facts. As a kid, I was the kid that was the lovable kid, but it was always in trouble. Found himself in trouble all the time. I was a kid that if you ask him, you know, how many sides are there on a stop sign, I would say 10. You know, front, back, then 8 sides. And so I'm right in my own way, but towards the school system, I'm always wrong. And so that's why I struggled academically. I failed every English class known to mankind, passed every Spanish, but I can't speak Spanish. I don't get it. And so that's another reason why I'm honored to actually write a book. It's an inspiration to kids, too.
All right. So if you were like that as a kid growing up, what were you like as a football player?
Definitely. As a ball player, you know, I was a guy that had to work extremely hard. Nothing was given to me. I was never the first pick in anything. Always had to dedicate myself. I've always had to put in more time than everyone else. But I'm humbled by it because then I authentically got to grow and give back and teach. And so as a ball player, I was versatile. I came in the league, as we were just talking about earlier, you know, by playing behind Maurice Jones-Drew, and I had to figure out how to get on the field. So I was a great catcher. I could protect the quarterback, and I was really good at blocking punts.
Rashad Jennings joining me. I'm laughing because I'm thinking about MJD, and I shared that story with you before we came on. I talked to him before that draft. So you were with him before the draft. You know his mindset. I said to him, where do you think you're going to go? And he said, first. I said, you mean first round, right? He goes, no, I mean first overall. And I said, respect, my man. Do you really believe that? He said, first overall. Everybody laughed, and then he went out and had the career he had. Like, what was he like before the draft when you guys were getting ready for the draft?
Yeah, he had that same kind of attitude. Right. You know, him and Fred Taylor were two of the guys that I really got a chance to learn from, and Matt Forte before I even entered into the NFL. And I lived with Maurice in the offseason. And so his mentality, you know, I appreciate it. He is so meticulous and militant about studying the game. He's one of the smartest football players I've ever been around. And he definitely taught me how to study the game. So
we're talking to Rashad Jennings. He's joining us here in studio. He's got a brand new book out. I mean, the thing is, not only did you have some issues with your weight and your glasses and your asthma, but you had a 0.6 GPA. All right. So how did you get that thing turned around?
Yeah, big major turning point was fifth string running back. And we're playing against our high school rival. And when I say I'm fifth string, I mean to the point we only had four running backs. And they just said, we'll give you fifth just to shut you up. Wow. And we're playing against a high school rival. When we're playing against them, there was a Tennessee scout that came to watch the starting running back. And the coming out, break the weight tape, I get on the sideline. You know where you put your thigh pads at?
Sure.
All right, I used to put M&M, candy, and Sprite right there because I didn't play. I would watch the game, me and my buddy Speedy. He didn't earn his name.
Dude,
we would
contraband.
Watch.
Contraband. Yeah. Soda and M&M's. Because you knew you weren't going to play.
Never going to play.
In case you got hungry during the game.
Yeah, we ate M&M's and I watched the show.
Dude, not protein between your pads, but M&M's and Sprite.
That's how you do it.
Clones. Cops are stepping up enforcement on motorists who are not wearing their seatbelts. If you've thought to yourself, I'm not going very far, or I'm in a rush, or seatbelts are just too uncomfortable, then know this. You're putting yourself at the risk of injury or death. There is never a good excuse not to buckle up, because it's always dangerous to not wear your seatbelt when you get behind the wheel of a car. Hey, men, I'm talking to you right now. Men wear their seatbelts at a lower rate than women, and thus more men are killed in car accidents. That's a fact. We can do better, guys. We have to. When you're not wearing your seatbelt, you're risking serious injury or death. It's a fact. Cops are writing tickets, so don't take the risk. Don't play the odds. Again, let me say it so it sticks. Click it or ticket.
Now, the first string got hurt, right? The second string gets hurt. The third string gets hurt. The fourth string gets hurt.
Come on, four guys got hurt.
They put in, the coach is scanning the sideline, catches eye contact with me, looks away, puts in a receiver at running back before he puts me in. I can't make this up. Goes in and gets hurt. They finally have no choice. They put me in. I'm trying to speed through the story.
Dude,
but
who are you guys playing against? The 85 Bears? Yeah, how did five dudes get knocked out? they come
vicious.
To you.
They were called the Brookville Bees at that. So I guess they were stinging everybody. But so my first play in, 40-yard touchdown, very first play. Came back on the sideline. They put in the first string. He taped up his ankle. He got hurt again. They put me back in and scored another touchdown. Going to halftime, come out, similar situation on defense. Guys are getting hurt. They put me in on defense. I scored my first play on defense. Sack, fumble, score, and I end the game with a pick. So I scored four touchdowns, two on offense, two on defense, only played 14 plays. That Tennessee scout came up to me after the game and said, Rashad, I came to watch the starter, but I couldn't help but to notice you. How were your grades?
0.6.
Exactly. He said, now you got to try to get a 0.6. How in the world do you have a 0.6? From that day, he looked at me and said, Rashad, you got potential to play in the play in a collegiate level. And for the first time outside of my family, the people that's going to support me no matter what, somebody saw something in me. I transferred high schools. My brothers went and coached at a private school for free. They're 10 to 13 years older than me. I was the whoops, here we go again, baby. They went and coached at a private school for free to pay half the tuition. My parents took a mortgage against the home to pay the other half the tuition. I transferred. I never looked back. I stopped making excuses.
Rashad Jennings joining us. I mean, there's so much to unpack in that. Listen, I understand that guys or scouts or coaches will come to see a person and see a teammate. I've heard that story a million times. I've never heard the story quite like that story. I mean, if these guys don't get hurt and you don't get that opportunity that day, are you and I having this conversation right now?
Absolutely not. I don't foresee that really happening. I'm thankful, you know, that I had an opportunity. But that's exactly what it is. It was an opportunity. And that's why one of the quotes to stick with me is when opportunity presents itself, it's too late to go prepare for it.
Rashad Jennings joining me. You know, it's not just you. There are things around you as well. As an example, you went to the University of Pittsburgh to play football, but then you transferred to Liberty to be closer to your dad, who was dealing with complications from diabetes. So what was that time like?
It was a difficult time because me and my father never really had the best of relationship. And transferring was something that I was going to do just because I have a love for my mom. My mama's boy wanted to be there for my dad, but that was a big turning point in my life, the relationship with my pops. When I was 13, I had asthma. I was hospitalized. I was blowing through a peak flow, only went a centimeter. My dad smoked and drank in the house all the time. The doctors told my father, you can't smoke around your son. I get out of the hospital. I go back home. My dad begins to smoke in the house. I smell it, seeming through the vents. I start choking up. Now, I don't know if people know what it's like to be choking, but it's a very uncomfortable thing. I covered my mouth with a pillow. I went upstairs, knocked on my dad's door, opened it. He's sitting in the corner drinking and smoking. I said, Dad, can you stop drinking and smoking to be there for me? Took a sip of his drink, puff of his smoke. He said, Rashad, what do you want to do when you get older? For the first time my dad ever asked me that. You know,
so you're 13 at that point.
13. Overweight, red rim, glasses, everything. And he's never asked me that. So I can see he's being arrogant, but a part of me is excited I get to tell him. I said, I don't want to play running back in the NFL. He took a sip of his drink, puff of his smoke. He said, "You think you'd be able to make it to the NFL yourself without drinking and smoking?" And with tears in my eyes, I looked at him. I said, "Just to prove you wrong, I'm never going to do it. And I'm 33 today. I've never drank alcohol a day in my life. I never smoked a day in my life." But it was just to prove him wrong.
To this day, you still never have?
No.
You've never had a sip of alcohol?
Uh-uh. Never. And it's awesome because him watching his kid prove him wrong, he quit smoking and drinking himself. And we both feel like we saved each other's life because of that. But if I never really looked at those moments, if I would have responded with hatred, you know, if I would have responded to racism the wrong way, if I wouldn't have had a loving mother, if I wouldn't have, you know, kept God in my life, if in life through this book that I talk about majorly, I keep pulling that big word if out of the middle of life, and it's going to force every reader to find their own ifs.
Rashad Jennings joining us. What is that? The if in life. What is anybody's if in life? What do you mean by the if in life?
Yeah, the if in life. So it's when, again, it's the play on words, but I personally feel like we all have major turning points. We really do. And it's a matter if you're willing.
You gave me a couple right there, right? The day you got into a game when you were the fifth string, the day your father said, "Do you think you're going to be, or what do you want to do?" I mean, those are a couple of major ifs right there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I continue through 15 chapters of giving intimate stories, things that nobody's ever known about me for 33 years of my perspective on life. And I keep going back to this little word, if, because that's the synopsis and the turning point in everybody's life. If I would have done A or B, which one? And I feel like this book kind of gives everyone the onus of taking control and getting off the sidelines and play in this game called life.
Get in the arena. Rashad Jennings, my guest. You know, you tell the story about you're in high school football and you've got M&Ms in your pads. You've got soda in your pads. And I'm looking at you right now, man. You still look great. And when you look at your career in the NFL, you had this regimen for taking care of yourself. It was legendary. I mean, in a league where everybody takes care of themselves, you were like next level with it. What was your routine like? And then how did you approach food, rest, recovery, and everything else that went into your day?
Yeah, so I had to focus on that. Obviously, being this 275-pound kid, I never wanted to go back to that.
Dude, were you 270 at one point?
275.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah, I was out there doing it, eating everything I could. But
it's, I was out there doing it. I'm still out there doing it, man.
But yeah, I've had to learn how to take care of my body, truly. And, you know, I've been through everything from getting my blood drawn once a year and eating based upon that. I eat gluten and dairy free, no celiac, just a choice.
Paleo or?
Just gluten and dairy free.
Okay.
Pure choice. I've noticed my energy levels skyrocket because I'm fuel efficient. I've actually slept in a hyperbaric oxygen chamber through the course of my career.
Dude, I love that story. Let me jump right in. You had a choice, another choice you had to make, A or B. Could have bought yourself a new car at one point, but you decided to buy a hyperbaric chamber instead of a car because you chose to invest in yourself. Was that a tough decision? Why'd you go that route?
So in the NFL, and it's actually pretty funny, everybody used to make fun of me because I drove the same car from high school. They're like, "Rashad, get yourself a car." I said, "Man, I'm going to ride this thing until the wheels fall off."
What kind of car?
It was an Impala, okay. Chevy Impala. And funny enough, I actually was going to pick up someone at the airport, and the wheels fell off the daggone car, man.
Well, dude, you said you drive that thing until the wheels fell off, and they did.
Mark my words. I had to buy a car. But my first purchase in the NFL ever, I bought a hyperbaric oxygen chamber because I wanted to invest in myself. I don't know how the stock market worked, but I know how hard I could work, and I invested in my career. And it definitely has paid off figuratively and literally.
All this is in his book. I'm joined in studio for a few more moments by Rashad Jennings. You not only were on Dancing with the Stars, you won Dancing with the Stars. Yeah. Athletes always seem to do well because, one, it's an athletic endeavor, and two, they know how to grind. They know how to work. They're competitive. What was that experience like, and what was that win like?
Oh, man, I loved it. Yeah. I suggest if anybody ever gets an opportunity to do that show, do it. Like, trust me, do it. It was a humbling experience. And it's funny, every offseason I pick up a new craft. So the first offseason, while I'm down in Fort Lauderdale training, I'm playing the guitar, plucking, trying to learn how to play, right? Got good, never put it down. The next offseason, I want to learn magic tricks and card tricks. The next offseason, I want to learn fencing, archery, poetry. Every offseason, I pick up something. This last offseason was dancing. I said, I never ballroom dance. I want to go learn. Went to a studio. I signed up for classes. They said, we don't have any availability until 2 weeks from the day. Cool, no problem. Be back in 2 weeks. A week from that day, Dancing with the Stars happened.
Huh.
So I was like, all right, I guess I get to learn in front of the world instead of this studio.
So you've never done it before?
Never done it before, but I love attacking new things. I'm an autodidact. I truly am. It exudes me to learn something I've never done before. And I went all in. And I just went on thinking I was going to learn a quick cha-cha number, you know, to go about my business. But week after week after week, when people kept voting me on, I was like, man, I might mess around and win
this. Good at this. Yeah, right? So, I mean, like, what was that challenge like mentally and physically? Was that pretty taxing?
Yes, it is. It was gruesome. I talked to T.O. right after he did his show, and I was like, which one was harder to you, training camp or doing Dancing with the Stars? Dancing with the Stars.
Come on. Why?
It's because, one, you've never moved your body that way. And everything's polar opposite of how you move on the football field. You dorsiflex in football. On the ballroom, you point your feet down. Like, everything is
counterintuitive, the opposite, right?
But it helps you so much. I wish I could have had a chance to go right back into the league afterwards because I feel so much looser. But the 6 hours a day, we put in 362 hours, Emma and I, and the next contestant on the show ever was closest, was 100 less. So we put in a lot of work and didn't realize it.
We're talking to Rashad Jennings. So really quickly, what was the reaction like? I mean, you're used to being the guy. You're used to people looking at you because you played the game at a high level. Yeah. But this is a whole different audience now.
Vastly different.
So like when you're walking around, people obviously are seeing you and responding to you. What was that like compared to what you would normally get as a football player?
Yeah, you get recognition as a ball player, but you have on this bucket helmet right all the time. And nobody really sees your face. Dancing with the Stars, you're stripped from that. They see your face. And even how you win Dancing with the Stars versus how you win in football are vastly different. Football, myself and 53 other men can go in any city, regardless if you like me or hate me, and take what we want, win, and go about our business. Winning Dancing with the Stars, the only reason you win is because people like you.
That's it.
There's nothing else. And so it's awesome to get a chance to do the tour. I did a Dance with the Stars tour, and city to city to city, performing and dancing. At one point, I was laughing. I'm on stage dancing. I'm like, I'm doing a host moment. I'm like, I can't believe I'm traveling the world dancing.
Right.
But I wouldn't trade it for anything. It's really opened me up to a lot of things. Plus, I'm a hopeful romantic, and I got to, like, show that other side. I'm the guy in the locker room. It's cool because playing the American gladiator sport, the most physical man amongst men, right? And then you find me lighting candles, dancing around to Frank Sinatra with a broomstick in the living room. So
I'll tell you what, dude, not bad for, quote, a little overweight, dorky kid with glasses and asthma, an author, a professional baller. He won Dancing with the Stars. Rashad, if they want to get your book, it's called The If in Life. The If in Life. If you're watching on TV, you can see it right now. For those who don't know, what's the best way to get the book?
Best way to get the book, it is in all stores right now, today, anywhere the books are sold. Also, you can go to Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com. It's actually an audio book, which I could suggest to pick up because before every chapter in that audio book, I give a quick prelude of what you're about to listen to. So, and then the ifinlifebook.com, RashadJennings.com, everywhere.
Wednesday, hump day, lots to do and to get done. Contact lenses should not be one of them. With Simple Contacts, you can renew your prescription and reorder your contacts from anywhere in minutes. No more doctor's offices or waiting rooms. You take a 5-minute vision test from your phone or computer. It is reviewed by a licensed doctor, and you receive a renewed prescription and reorder of your contacts. All you need is your current contacts, an internet connection, and 10 feet of space. Do you have an unexpired prescription? Just upload a photo or your doctor's information and order your lenses. Instead of heading to the doctor every single year to renew your prescription, take a few minutes out of your day to do it on your own time and your own terms. Please note, this is not a replacement for your periodic full eye health exam, but it is vision care for the 21st century. The vision test is only $20. The contact lens prices are unbeatable and standard shipping is free. Best of all, we're offering a promotion for our listeners. Get $30 off your contacts at simplecontacts.com/Rome or enter Rome at the checkout. Did you hear what I just said? No more doctor's office visits. You can take your eye test from any screen with an internet connection. That's $30 off your contacts at simplecontacts.com/Rome or enter code Rome at checkout. And of course, the one thing you all want to talk about is Mrs. Glover. And as I mentioned off the very top, I'm not giving you what you want. I know what you want. I'm not giving you what you want. Nor am I going to tolerate you coming in here and giving me what you want. Because what this is a really strange, disturbing, concerning story. It broke last night. Details are still coming out. But the summary of the story is this. Lucas Glover, the 2009 U.S. Open champion, a member of two President's Cup teams, allegedly assaulted by his wife, Krista, after he had a bad round at the Players' Championship on Saturday. Now, I bring this up because it's news. I bring this up reluctantly, though, because I'm not sure you clones can handle it. Some of you, yes. Many of you, no. And don't get me wrong. This is not one of those stories that I'm hesitant to bring up because I think that you'll go low rent with it. This is not like that story about that New Jersey superintendent that I'm still debating whether or not that I should discuss. That story is crazy. This story is not that. This story is sad and it's disturbing. The report alleges that after he shot a 78 to miss the cut on Saturday, according to the police report, quote, every time he plays poorly in a tournament, Krista begins yelling at him, stating that he is a loser, quote unquote, and an expletive, and ultimately starting an altercation with him about his performance. Lucas stated, Krista had been drinking throughout the day, and after playing a bad round of golf today, she began yelling at him in front of their kids and his mother, end quote. See, to me, that's not funny. In fact, that's pretty awful. It's horrible. And it gets even worse. According to that report, Lucas said that Krista told him, quote, how he needs to fire everyone and how he better win or her and the kids would leave him and he would never see the kids again. End of quote. Now, I know a lot of you are looking to have a real good laugh about this. Oh, check it out. Look at the golfer and the fact that his wife is attacking him and his mother after a bad round. Whoa, she's crazy. Am I right? And then you're going to make a bunch of lame jokes about it. Like, hey, Rome, if my wife got that mad after my bad rounds, I'd never be able to golf ever again. This guy's a bad round, and she verbally and physically abuses him and his mother and threatens to take away the kids. Hilarious. I mean, that's as good as it gets, right? Man, I'm busting aside. Yeah, how's that? How's that for a swing thought? Balance, rotate, stay on plane, know where the club face is, finish to the target, and knock it tight if you ever want to see your kids ever again. Can you imagine being that dude on that track with that between his ears for 72 holes? And if you want to come in here with some wacky retort about how this situation with the Glovers, some wacky retort for it, hey, do me this favor. Do me this favor first. Delete your email address and my phone number from your phone because I'm not into your wacky one-liners about domestic violence and beating up your mother-in-law. There's nothing funny about this. Not when she's been drinking, not when she allegedly attacked Lucas and then his mother when his mother tried to intervene, and not when the police officers observed lacerations on Glover and his mother. And certainly not when she got verbally and physically aggressive with officers as they tried to arrest her. According to the police report, Krista resisted getting into the police car, and she allegedly, quote, wrapped her legs and feet around the door and frame of the car, preventing the lower half of her body from entering the vehicle, end quote. And then when the officers were finally able to get her into the car, quote, Krista began screaming while forcefully kicking the rear driver's side door of the patrol car, causing the door to visibly separate from the cell of the door frame. Quote, end of quote. That's not funny. And it's not funny that according to the police report, she yelled that the handcuffs were too tight. And then when they were loosened, she removed her hand from the cuffs and unsecured herself in the back of the patrol car. and then allegedly told an officer, quote, wait till the tour hears about this. You will lose your job. This is why cops get shot in the face. And wait till I talk with the judge. You will be bleeping fired over this. End quote. Yeah, I don't know. Something tells me the officers are not the ones staring down a lifetime of regret right here. So, clones, I hate to be a big buzzkill for a lot of you, but it's not funny. Because there's absolutely nothing funny about domestic violence. It's sad. And based on the accounts, this is somebody who's got some serious, serious issues. I'm not going to play psychologist or doctor. But if you're reacting to a bad round of golf like that, and you're threatening to rip somebody's kids because of a bad day at the office, then she needs to get some help. And I hope she does get it. Because clearly this was not the first time, and I'm guessing it sure as hell will not be the last time. Sorry to wreck your fun, clones, but I don't see anything funny about that at all. Look at me. Listen to me. There's nothing funny about that at all. Nothing funny about domestic violence. It's a bad deal. She's got issues. I hope that she gets help for those issues. Sorry to wreck your fun. Derwin James joining me in studio. My man, what's up? How are you?
How you doing, my man? I'm good.
Good to see you. So how's life? You and I spoke 3 months ago to the day while you were still in the thick of draft preparation. A lot has changed since then. How is your life right now?
My life's amazing. Right now, you know, things are kind of moving fast, you know, just coming into a new system. But, you know, it's slowing down for me, and I'm happy to be in L.A.
That's the key, right? You want things to slow down. So you've gone through your first workouts with the team. How did that go? And I've got to know, what's it feel like to put on that Chargers helmet and to live the dream after this all this time and all this work?
Well, it felt good coming into a new locker room. Like I said, you go from being at the top of the locker room in the college, now you're at the bottom. So just getting familiar with some of the guys, some of the vets. And, you know, just learn how to become a pro. And like I said, I'm happy to be with the Chargers, man.
Derwin James, yeah.
Coming to a great team.
You're coming to a really good team, a really good situation. And by the way, a really good secondary. You've got a lot of guys already in Casey Hayward, Desmond King, Trevor Williams, the list goes on. In fact, Hayward said that when the team picked you, his phone started blowing up with texts like, damn, you guys got the steal of the draft. He'd already been a fan of yours for a while. He loves how versatile you are. So how looking forward are you to playing with him?
Casey's like a role model to me. I've been knowing Casey about 2-3 years. We built a great relationship, and he's a dog on the field. And so now just be able to play with a guy that I know I can trust on and off the field, you know, that's just going to make my job a little more easier.
Yeah, go into that for a minute. He's a dog on the field. When you talk about a guy being a dog on the field, what do you mean?
A dog, man. He comes to play every day. He's a competitor. He don't like losing. He loves winning. He wants to win every rep, and it shows for itself. He's all pro corner, one of the best in the NFL.
Derwin James joining me in studio. You know, I talked to your coach yesterday, Anthony Lynn, and, man, I love this guy. I'm not supposed to play favorites. I love this guy because he's got this presence, man. He's just got this vibe, and he's a man's man. Anthony Lynn is a tough man, and he was asked to describe you, and this is what he said about you. Quote, he's an alpha dog. No doubt about it. He is a leader, and that's why we brought him on this team. It's just a matter of time before his intangibles start to show. I mean, dude, that's really high praise for a rookie. How much does it mean to you to hear that and that you've made that kind of impression on your coach already?
That means a lot. That means I'm doing some things right. But, you know, I'm not trying to be settled. You know, I'm trying to continue to come in and get better. And, you know, just trusting what the coach is telling me. Coach Gus and Coach Marlo, all those guys, what they telling me. You know, I'm just trying to soak it all in like a sponge. And, man, I'm just ready to get on the field.
All right, take me back to draft night. The expectation was that you would go pretty early, but, you know, draft nights are very unpredictable. You never know what's going to happen. You didn't go as early as you expected, but what about the experience overall? What was that like?
It was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Like you say, in that green room, it was like a roller coaster. But I had my family there with me, so I always had in my mind, no matter where I was picked, you know, I was going to come in and I was going to work. So I didn't really care about went early or late, but I'm just happy that I fell to the charge. You know, I'm coming into a great situation, a great team, and a great organization, and they got a lot of great people around there. So, You know, I'm just happy.
You're in a good spot. I'm going to ask you about your family in a minute, but you get a call from Chargers GM Tom Telesco. All right, so that phone rings. And again, I'm talking about a guy. I mean, when you think of the sacrifices you've made and everybody around you and the sacrifices they've made, and for what? For that phone call. What's it like when that phone rings and you pick it up?
Oh, it was crazy because I had both of my phones on the table, but my phone didn't ring. So my agent phone actually rung. So I see him just get on the phone, and he's like, "The phone's for you." So he passed the phone down to me, and it was Mr. Telesco. And man, he was just like, "Man, you're gonna help us come win the Super Bowl." And I was like, "Yeah, man, I'm ready." And it was a call that I'll never forget in my life.
So you get that phone call, and then you start to work out. In terms of that secondary, I mentioned some of the vets and that they're waiting for you to get there too. When you look at that secondary, how good can you guys be? I mean, I know you're just getting started, but do you feel like that's a secondary that can be amongst the, or maybe even the best in the NFL?
Yeah, I feel like we come in because, like you said, we got a lot of pieces on the outside and inside. I just feel like, and especially with the rush that we have, the pass rush we have, I feel like we come in and work hard and, you know, rely on each other. I feel like we'll be one of the best in the NFL.
All right, so I mentioned Anthony Lynn. When he came on the show, he talked about going back to school. He finished up his degree. He graduated over the weekend, and he walked with his classmates. You said that when he told the players about that, you got fired up to finish your degree. What's it mean to you to know that your head coach values a degree like that, made it a priority, and did the work and finished?
First of all, it speaks volumes because he pulled everybody to a side at practice, and he told everybody what it was because he's a guy that don't like excuses. He always loves you to be on time, a man of your word. And just for him, you know, to call everybody up and just say what he needed to do and what he had promised his mom kind of made me think back what I told my mom, one that I wanted to get my degree. So I just say Coach Lynn is a great role model on and off the field, and he's a guy that I know I can trust.
So was that important to your mom? When you said to your mom, "I'm going to finish this thing, I'll get my degree," what did she think?
She said, yeah, she know once I give her my word, she know I'm not gonna let her down. So, you know, she knows it's coming in a matter of time whenever I have my first offseason.
Let me ask you this. I mean, I said to Anthony Lynn, why do we go to college? I mean, we all, look, you go to college to learn lots of different things, but you go to college to get a good job. That dude's got a great job. You have a great job. I'm sure everyone in your family is really proud of you. You went there and you got a great job. So why is it so important to get that degree too, when you already have that great job and that great life?
Because when you get a piece of paper, nobody can take it away from you. I feel like that's the biggest thing. My mom and my parents always stress. No matter, you can't play football forever. You can't coach forever. You know, injuries happen and a lot of things happen. But when you got a great degree, it's always something you can fall back onto. Nowadays with these jobs, you know, you got to have, they're looking for a college degree, you know, to get you in the door. So
let me tell you something. Nobody can take that from you. That says something. That says a lot. You talk about a piece of paper. After you were drafted, you read a letter that your mother wrote to you.
Yeah.
In that letter, she talked about how much she loved you, how proud she is of you, and how you're an inspiration to her and everybody in the whole family, and that dreams do come true. What was it like to read that letter?
Man, if you look at the video, you can see the emotions. It was something that, you know, I just couldn't even put into words when I had read it, because at first, you know, it kind of started off, you know, a little bit. I thought I was going to be all right. I told myself I wasn't going to cry. But then, you know, as I kept reading, you know, I just thought back to all those times, you know, she sacrificed for me and my brother and sister, you know, taking me to practice and doing all the little things, you know, to help me get where I am. So, you know, that's why I really hats off to her.
Listen, I got
to
be honest. I myself got a little choked up watching that. I got a little emotional watching you read that. And then after you were done, you kept saying that it was, quote, priceless. Being drafted, obviously, is an amazing moment. But how much does it mean to have a letter like that from your mom?
Man, like I said, it speaks volumes just from the type of person she is and the type of man she helped me become. And, like, she's always been there and, you know, always been somebody I can fall back on and, you know, I'm gonna make sure mom all right.
I don't know how you repay somebody like that, how you thank somebody like that, because it's one thing to say that your parents make sacrifices. I mean, that's selfless. I mean, she probably never, ever, ever did anything for herself, but only for you.
It was always for her, for me, my brother and sister. She'll move the family just for me to play football, just to be focused. I remember just a lot of little things that she did, you know, to help me get to this point where I'm at. And so, you know, that's why I say if I had to do it all again, I'd ask for a mom like that.
Derwin James, my guest, I'm going to ask you one thing about what you do for her. But when you said that she made these decisions so you could play football, when you're young and you're coming up and, you know, a lot of people are looking at you, and I'm not saying this is the case with your family, but in a lot of cases, you have families that are depending on that one alpha, that one kid who's so good, the chosen one. Do you feel any pressure when you're young and you're coming up and everybody's making sacrifices for you? What's that like?
It's just one of those things, because a lot of times people will do favors for you, just something in the long run. But you can kind of tell the people that are really there for you, like my mom and my family, my aunties and cousins. I always knew that it was like literally genuine. Like, it's a difference when somebody just it's love. Like, you can see the real and you can see the fake. So I was always able to see it at a young age. And like I say, the people that's always been there for me, you know, I understand and. I take value to that.
I was just going to say, you can tell at an early age the real, make the distinction between the real and the fake. Yeah. So one of the big questions for rookies is, what do you do with that paycheck? You've already said that you want to do something for your mother. Do you have any idea what you might do for her?
Man, I know I'm going to get her a house, probably get her a house or a car or something. So, you know, I want to make sure she's living comfortable and making sure she's okay.
Derwin James in studio. Even before you sat down, I got this email. Let me read this to you. Derwin freaking James. I have been a Bolts fan since a freshman in high school, and everybody told me to pick a better team. I've gone through some bad times, but I can't lose my love for the Chargers. Now they're putting together a team that I am so proud of. I did so many fist bumps when they drafted James, and I threw my arm out. I am so excited for next year, and I can't wait till this defense shoves lightning bolts in all of your asses. War Derwin James. War following the bolt anywhere. War making noise in the playoffs. I mean, that's a guy in SoCal that's all fired up.
Man.
How fired up are you hearing how fired up he is?
Hey, he just got me chilled. I want to go run and hit somebody right now, man. But like I said, the Chargers fan, I remember just being drafted that day, just being drafted at the draft, you know, going into the stands and just, it's a picture of me holding a belt. And just celebrating with the fans, you know, it's a lot of support that I'm getting from the Chargers fans. And I'm excited, man. I just want to come in and just work hard and, you know, bring that excitement to the city.
All right, so finally, what's it like here? I mean, you played your college ball at Florida State, so you're not one of those guys who's not used to the good weather. But this is a good quality of life right here. There's lots of distractions if you let yourself get distracted. What's the process like and what's your day-to-day like right now?
Oh, just keeping the main thing. I'm staying focused on what I need to stay focused on. I'm here, but I know what I'm here for. I'm here to play ball. And like I said, I got a lot to prove. I feel like I haven't done anything yet, and I haven't reached my full potential yet. But I feel like my best football is ahead of me, and I'm just coming into a great organization, great team. And like I say, I'm ready.
So. And keeping the main thing, and he's ready. Played his college ball at Florida State. He was the 17th pick overall, a first-team All-ACC-er, a freshman All-American, and a safety for the L.A. Chargers. Derwin James, my guest. Like I said, I ran you down before the draft, and I said at that time, once you're settled, let's do it again. Yeah. And you're settled, and now you're in our house. I appreciate it, man. Great to see you, Derwin. Thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
Now, I don't have a whole take on this, and I don't want to waste any more time on this because I wasted so much time last night between doing my prep, checking out the games. I'm just being really transparent. I wasted a hell of a lot of time on that because right after the Celtics beat down the Cavaliers, I went with a really simple tweet. Hashtag Celtics, hashtag Laurel.
Laurel.
I mean, it's clear as day to me. For those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, the whole Laurel Yanny thing, there's an audio soundbite that's online right now, and 50% of the world hears one thing, 50% of the world hears something else. And anytime somebody hears one thing, they cannot believe that the other side is hearing the other side. Like, it's a joke. It's weird. It's really weird. But it's a thing. And it jumped the day, and it's still trending high on Twitter right now. The reason I'm irritated by this is I quickly heard Laurel, but the rest of the night I heard Yanny.
Laurel.
And even more bizarre, I said to Janet, because the thing started to mess with my mind a little bit. And I didn't know if my mind started to kind of react to it, or my mind started to hear what it thought it was hearing. I mean, the whole thing was a mind bleep. So I brought Janet in. I said, Janet, I want to play you something, and I want you to listen to this. And I said, what do you hear?
Laurel.
And she says, Laurel. Laurel, why? What do you hear? I'm like, are you kidding? We literally were in the same room listening to it at the same time, and we heard different things. I'm like, this is the weirdest thing ever. You know, like, so then you get people online saying, yeah, but if you listen to it at the higher frequency versus the lower frequency, that explains why some people are hearing it one way or the other. I'm like, that's great. But we're listening to it at the same frequency at the same time, and we're hearing different things. Like, it was some kind of weird parlor trick.
Laurel.
I'm like, why are you messing with me, babe? I mean, like, why are you doing that? She's like, what are you talking about? How do you not hear Laurel?
Laurel.
I said, I did about an hour ago, and now it's nothing but Yanny.
Laurel.
And it's really starting to piss me off. And I've gone down this rabbit hole, and I'm getting deeper and deeper and deeper. Because what I'm doing now is I'm listening to it, and I'm wasting time, and now I'm wasting other people's time by hitting them up on the phone saying, what are you hearing? What are you hearing? And it Laurel. Got worse and worse and worse. And even worse, it jumped the day. It's still a thing.
Laurel.
So I heard both. In answer or in response to the question, Yanny or Laurel, both. I've heard both. And I've done everything. I've gone up. I've gone down with the audio. I've changed computers. I've gone to my phone. I've rebooted. It's pissing me off. It really is. What's up, Rome? Long time. We are having a watch party also. Regards, Jay Stu and the boys. Drew in Vegas. Go Knights, go. That's different. Janet wanted to correct me. She heard Yanny.
Laurel.
See, this is my whole point. I don't even remember what I heard anymore. I don't remember what she heard. I don't remember what I heard. I don't remember if I'm Team Yanny or Team Laurel. I'm looking at my Twitter feed. I clearly was Team Laurel for a moment. I was when it started.
Laurel.
It's messing with my head right now. Whoever set out to do that is getting over. You win. A viewing party or a watch party regards Jay Stu and the boys. That's a different kind of watch party. I'm talking about a watch party for the Smack Off, where you go to a bar and you watch the biggest day of the year on this show on television. Jay Stu, back in the day, allegedly was with a bunch of other guys watching porn in a dorm room. Or so the story goes. I wasn't there. Dear Rome, some fat idiot came into my job today complaining about back pain. Sincerely, Hawks Doctor. Tony and Yonkers. Yonkers in the house. Hawk has been glossed. Adam Hogg on Twitter. Yonkers. My man, Tony, what's up? How'd you find the program? Are you in space? Are you watching on TV? How'd you do it? Yonkers in the house. Dear Rome, the doctor told Hawk he was fat and an idiot. Give that man a golden ticket. He's got a better rap than a lot of you already. I've never even met him. What a great diagnosis that is from a doctor. Yeah, you know what? Okay, first, you're an idiot. Anybody who throws their back out and then proceeds to play five rounds of golf like in 6 days is an idiot. Number two, you know what? You're fat.
Fat.
And you're weak. Your core is weak. Your gut is fat. It's putting undue duress on your back. Not as much as the violent torque that's involved with playing golf. But having a weak core and a fat gut is also hurting you. You're an idiot and you're fat. Go get some PT. No MRI for you. Hawk, you're just providing me with endless content. It's not the show that I want to do, but it's the show that you're leaving me no choice with. I have to do. When you're gimping around here, when you're on the rug with your foam roller, I have to ask. Speaking of which, Rome, Hawk is foam roller in the office guy. Now he's taking food off of my plate. Signed, office back rub guy. Office back rub guy. Office shake your hand every single day guy. And foam roller guy. At comedian Billy Bo tweets, Jim, after hearing Laurel for about 1,000 times, I now hear, fat!
Fat!
I hope that if I get away from it for about 24 hours and I stop listening, maybe I'll hear the right thing.
Laurel.
I think it's like rewired my brain to be Laurel.
Laurel.
I don't know what it is. Somebody also said online that if you listen to music for a while and then you do it, that'll give you the clear, real listen. I don't know what it is. I just know it's pissing me off because I can't figure it out. Hey, somebody straighten me out. Somebody let me know what it is. And don't come with it depends on the audio and the high frequency or the low frequency, because I listen to it. Again, my wife and I, Janet and I, listen to it on the same laptop at the same time and heard different things. So explain that to me. Let's go to Diamond Head. Aaron, what's going on, bro? How are you?
What's happening, partner?
What's up, partner?
Hey, man, I got you back, bro. The same exact thing happened to me this morning. I wake up. My wife goes, hey, listen to this. My four-year-old daughter's right next to me. She's like, just listen to this. Tell me what you hear. Clear as day. Laurel. Laurel. I'm like, Laurel, why? Brooklyn, what do you hear? Laurel. Nope, she plays it again, like 3 seconds later. All I hear is Yanni, Yanni, Yanni. I'm like, what the heck is going on? Like, my brain playing tricks on me?
Right.
So my whole way at work, 20-minute commute, I'm playing this thing on a loop, right? All I hear is Yanni, Yanni, Yanni. I'm like, what the hell is going on? So I get to work. I play this thing for a coworker. Sure enough, as soon as I get inside and I play it, I hear Laurel. I'm like, what the heck is going on? Like, I don't know if my brain's making me hear certain things or what, but I definitely heard both Laurel and Yanni. And right now, when I just heard it, when you played it just now, all I heard it was Laurel. So I don't know what's going on,
Bridge, exactly.
I think the world's coming to an end.
I think you're right, Aaron. Good job, man. Thanks for making me feel better about me, because I'm in that same place. I mean, literally, I don't know if the world's coming to an end. I don't know if the world's coming to an end, but I know this. The world has come to a grinding halt. The world has come to a stop over the stupidest thing ever.
Laurel.
Torian Prince is my guest. Torian, it's great to have you on today. How are you? Torian, what's going on? How are you?
I'm doing good, man. How are you?
Good, good. I'm great. Listen, let me ask you about the NBA draft lottery first. That was held last night, and I bring it up because the Hawks had the third pick, or will have the third pick in the draft. But I want to go back a couple of years to when you were drafted, and you had been thinking about the handshake with Adam Silver for a long, long time. But then when you walked across the stage, you called an audible, and you went for a hug. Why did you do that, and what do you remember about that moment?
No, it was just a special moment for me. Very special moment, humbling moment. Like I said, I thought I was going to go up there and shake his hand like the usual, but I told myself just go ahead and give him a hug, man. That's how happy I was.
It's nice. All right, so this season, it may not have gone the way that you would have liked from a team perspective, but individually, you made a huge leap from your rookie year to this year. You doubled your scoring and starting every single game. So what was the biggest difference from last year to this year for you?
I think just really my preparation, the things I did before the game, the things I did after practice to continuously have myself ready to be able to play at a high level.
Torian Prince, my guest. Torian, I saw the piece that you wrote for the Players Tribune. It's an amazing thing to read, an amazing piece. And if you could, can you talk about describe about living a life of being grateful? For instance, one of the stories that you tell is that when you were growing up, you sold newspaper subscriptions and you saved enough money to buy a bike. Give me your thoughts on that bike for a minute. What was it like for you to go to Walmart to buy that bike and then to ride that bike home?
It just showed myself what hard work brings, especially at a young age. You really don't have much. Being in the position we were in, we really didn't have much as a family at that time. So, for me to go out and work for that money to be able to buy that, it was a special moment for me.
You know, I love also you wrote this, quote, after I paid, I was trying to walk the bike out of the Walmart like it wasn't a thing. I couldn't keep it cool. When the door was like 10 feet away, I got up on that bike. I rode it out of the store, end quote. And then when you got home, your father saw the bike and he said, where did you get that? And you told him you saved up for it. You bought that bike. He gave you a huge hug. He made dinner and then you parked the bike in the living room so you could admire it while you ate. What do you remember about that moment and that meal?
Just like I said, just looking at it and knowing I got that myself and sharing that moment with my pops at that time, and it meant a lot because I showed him that I could somewhat get certain things that I wanted on my own, and just basically showing him I could take some of the pressure off of him and that he don't have to really worry about me.
Torian Prince, my guest, because there was a lot of pressure. You also write that at that time your parents had divorced previously and your father had a lot on his mind, but you didn't really know what it was. As an example, he was working 6 days a week, but then when it was not enough and he lost the house, the two of you had to go out. I mean, what was it like when you were 12 years of age and your father told you that at least for a while you were going to be homeless? Did you even understand that and what that meant?
Nah, not really. Until you started bouncing place to place, and then as time went on, I started to catch on. But those are really the moments that really brought us together and really brought us closer, believe it or not. So I wouldn't say and I wouldn't change it, but going through hardships like that definitely bring out a different type of person and makes you a different type of person. I'm cool who I am today, so I'm not really too sad about it anymore.
Torian Prince joining us, and you write about this really eloquently in the Players Tribune. You talk about when you went to the Salvation Army, you and your dad were shown a room, and the room had four concrete walls, but no furniture, no carpet, no TV. What did you think of that room, and what did your dad think of that room?
I kind of looked at it as just a place to sleep. So we would sleep there and then get up the next morning and head out. So it wasn't your average house or your average room that you would have as a kid. But at that time, like I said, we were just going through it and doing whatever we could to just continue to live day by day.
Let me make this point, though. You were going through it, but your father said, hey, we're lucky we got this room. We're lucky we got this room. And he explained that other people were not as lucky because they had to share rooms. So when you're hearing your dad talk about a situation like that, what did that tell you about him and his approach to life?
He appreciates what he gets. Somebody that definitely has been through more than your average man. I think that's helped him build his character and his toughness from a mental standpoint. And no matter how deep you get to the bottom, it's always room for you to swim up to the top, kind of, sort of like that's the motto he lives by. So he's definitely appreciative and somebody that you always wanted to foxhole with.
Torian, one more thought about that. It was such a difficult situation, but he never complained. Your father never complained. So why was that, and what did you learn from that as a result? For instance, how did you remain so grateful through a time that was so challenging?
Him not complaining, it kind of just shows you what his focus was. It wasn't really on the situation at hand. It was really on the ending goal and trying to make ends meet and not really worrying about the situation you're in, but how to get out of it.
So then you get an opportunity. You play some basketball. You go to Warren High School in San Antonio, and most people who watched you play at Baylor or most people who watch you play right now probably assume that you had this amazing high school career, but the truth is you didn't play as a freshman because your grades weren't where they needed to be, and then when you were a sophomore and junior, the team was completely loaded, so you never really got that shot until you got to be a senior. It would have been easy, again, to get frustrated, maybe even give up, but you didn't. How come?
Kind of how I was growing up, not to really complain about the situation you're in, just be patient when you get the time, or when you do get an opportunity, take full advantage of it, because you never know, it might not come again. So I kind of train in fear. I kind of play in fear, because I just don't want this opportunity to pass by and me not take advantage of it. So that's why I kind of have a certain mindset that I do.
Torian Prince joining me. Now, I want to ask you about somebody named John Collins. NBA fans probably hear that name, and they think about your rookie teammate, but I'm talking about your coach, John Collins, who you described as a guy who had a Kobe mentality when it came to basketball. How so? How would you describe his attitude, and what kind of an impact did he have on you?
Oh, man, the impact he had on me was just changing my mentality as far as the person I was on the court, not necessarily off the court. But he always made sure that he worked hard, and he definitely had to push himself and train with a certain mindset to where, like, no matter who's in front of you, it's never about the guy in front of you. It's always about beating the second defender and making the right decision. So I think he was really the turning point for me in high school.
I mean, he put you and your teammate Marcus King through some crazy workouts. Like, how hot did he keep that gym, and what were those workouts like?
Whatever the temperature was outside, that's what the temperature was inside. You really had to run 2 miles before you get on the court, and before you get on the court, you got to be in the weight room for at least 30 minutes doing something. And then we on the court, no air conditioning, just really training for the next 2 hours. This is after a school practice that we just got picked up from.
Hey, Torian, when you make it to the NBA and you're playing the way you are right now, and now you have the best of everything, can you maintain that same mentality? I mean, that mentality got you to the association, but now you're there and you've got the five-star everything and you've got the Jets and you've got the life. Can you maintain that mentality, that one that he taught you?
Yeah, I can maintain it for sure. I have so far, and I plan to continue to do that.
Right, so earlier this month, you went back to your high school for a ceremony where they retired your jersey. You are the first basketball player at the high school to have your jersey retired. Given what you went through and what you overcame and what you persevered with, what does it mean to you to see you that jersey hanging up there forever?
I mean, it means a lot to me. It means that I treated the people around me right. I did things correctly. It makes you feel like you left your mark. Wherever it may lay, and I'm just glad that they were able to recognize me for that, and I hope to continue to do that and hopefully get it retired somewhere else.
Huntington Beach, Silk, brah, what's going on?
What's up, brah? I just checked my green jacket, brah. It's a little moth-eaten, but it still fits, brah.
Good.
Okay, brah, I see you working, and you haven't been giving yourself enough credit, brah. Charger fans are lit right now. Alvy, we're lit. Come on, Alvy, we're lit. Alvy.
Wow, dude. What's up, Alvy? What are you doing?
I think he had his finger on the bra button.
No doubt.
Shout out to New York, too. You guys better be showing my montage right now. So listen, Rome.
They are.
Okay, cool. Charger fans have been in a quandary with this move. It's been tough, but being in Orange County, it's kind of like the DMZ between LA and San Diego. I didn't have a problem with it, but I love Anthony Lynn. Our secondary is hyped. The interviews have been awesome, so the karma's going to be flowing. And I was really inspired by Anthony Lynn's story the other day. And I'm going to preface this take by saying, clones, do what you want with it. I'll check Twitter afterwards. But I made a career change later in life and decided to go back to school. And I graduated in 2016. I've talked about on the show about going into the teaching profession. So it's a lot of hoops to jump through, and it's a long road. And I was pretty stoked about it, but I wasn't going to walk either. And everybody told me, no, dude, you got to walk. And walking across that stage at the mighty Cal State Long Beach was one of the best things I ever did. It was super awesome, bro. So when I heard that story, I was super pumped. Also, I know you've been really hyped hearing from the Pittsburgh clones, brah, so I'm giving them plenty of time. Your boy Silk will be in the house December 2nd for Chargers v. Steelers, and I'm going to try to get a clone stock together. So I'm giving them plenty of time to roll out the red carpet, get those Primanti Brothers sandwiches ready to rock for your boy Silk, brah, and his crew, because we are going to be at Heinz Field in December. I don't know where I'm going to get the clothing necessary to be there in December, but I'm going to look on Amazon, see what I can do. And lastly but not leastly, brah, there's something you haven't been mentioning about this Hall of Fame vote. And you know I got your back on this, of course, but I'm always in your corner. Our colleague, Craig Kinchin, runs the Radio Hall of Fame, dude. Tell him to freeze the envelope, brah. It's a fait accompli, brah. You're a shoo-in. Okay, this is the end of the call where Alvy and I go dueling bras. Brah, 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 brah. Later, brah, brah.
Ken, my man, what's going on? How are you?
Thanks, Romy. Thanks for the vine, man. And first of all, let me say I appreciate the golden ticket. I am particularly happy because when I call your show, I'm only calling because I'm happy to talk to you. I'm not seeking a vine or a golden ticket like some of the other clones who are begging for it. So from that standpoint, I feel proud to have been extended an invitation. Towards that end, there's a couple of things I want to talk to, and I will get to Dan from Denver. The first thing I want to say was I want to talk about Kevin Durant, because when I'm looking at Kevin Durant, I'm reminded of the 1980s and 82 Los Angeles Lakers, the Showtime Lakers. And I picked those teams because, in particular, those teams beat you for 3.5 quarters. And then at the end of the game, if by chance you happen to be close, all they did was dump the ball in to the sky hook, and he carried them home. And when I'm looking at Kevin Durant in the half-court offense, I don't think we've seen a more efficient half-court score since the sky hook. And Kevin Durant, with that pull-up jumper from 12 to 15 feet, is efficient with that shot as Kareem is was with the sky hook. And what both of them have in common is they're basically unstoppable shots. You couldn't reach Kareem's sky hook because of the extension. You can't reach Kevin Garnett from 12 to 15 because of his extension. And so from that standpoint, I think this guy has got to be the best scorer in the game because he scores so easily. Houston bumps their butts to get buckets. Golden State scores almost as an afterthought. And so from that standpoint, I think Houston's going to be gone in five. Cleveland, you don't have enough to give LeBron help. When this guy comes, when one of those LeBron efforts is usually enough to send the other opposition into a fetal position. Unfortunately for the Cleveland Cavaliers, Boston is not that team. And in fact, because of their coach, they are never going to be a quit team. And in fact, I'm kind of surprised at all the hate that Brad Stevens gets. This is a guy that's not a self-promoter. He doesn't come up and say anything about himself or try to put himself as the smartest in the game. People recognize him as a great coach because of how his teams are prepared and how they play when he puts them out there. If people are going to hate on that, that's kind of like hating on the guy who doesn't do anything except for come with facts. Are you mad, Dan, for Denver with someone who comes with facts? Are you a person that wants alternate facts? Dude, I think you didn't got out of your lane. I think you didn't dump your pants. You sound to me like the guy that gets mad at the guy whose girlfriend chooses to talk to him. Hey, look, you got size 5 hands. You probably wear a size 7 shoe. I got a 12 size hand and I wear a 12 shoe. So I don't worry about little guys like you. From my standpoint, stay in your lane, step your game up. Don't worry about me. I got a ticket because it was extended. Worry about yourself, dog. I'm out, Romy. Thanks.
You got it. See you, Ken.
Who am I speaking with? Say, man, check this out, man. Cause, I sound like Vic, huh? Look, this is the way it goes, homie. Look here. I'm gonna try to be as quick as I can because I'm mad about, I was gonna drop a bomb, right? About a lot of things, right? One of the things, dude, the guys in, cause you see, now I record you, right? You're on TV, the whole thing, right? How come these guys can't get it on time? On the radio, you always come on, hey, welcome, jungle, blah, blah, blah. Then you go to TV, man, you got the picture, you know, and you see your, you know, like Pink Floyd, eh? Your lips move, but I can't hear what you're saying, you know? Anyways, dude, man, just give me a golden ticket just for the hell of it. I ain't going to call. I doubt it. And if I do, you know, I ain't going to do no good, right? And even then, hey, look out, eh? If I get one, look out, eh? Because I might write something, you know? I know how to write, you know what I mean? I mean, I could make something like, yesterday you're talking to this doctor, you know? You guys were talking about, like, what? Quiet Riot and stuff like that, you know, whatever. Boom, boom. Hey, let's play some bass basketball, I mean, or some, you know? Anyways, on the radio, on the thing, I voted for you, my man, on the radio. And you know what? If we all do it, you know, and it's the...
Good night now!